Hey, Ryan, how's it going today?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. So we had three games last week. We're in the All-Star break now. On Sunday, the Sixers put a spanking on the Lakers, 143-120. They lost on Tuesday to the Celtics, 112-109. And then they bounced back on Wednesday and beat the Knicks, 126-111. Let's start with the Lakers game. The starters played great. Embiid put up 37. Harris put up 22. Butler had 15, Redick had 21, and Simmons had 8, but he did a lot of other things. And they had a total of 103 points between the five of them. Close game in the first half. They kind of let them hang around. Kuzma went off. But the second half, and specifically the fourth quarter, they've really started pulling away.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and the fact that the game would even have been close if Kuzma wasn't on fire in the first half, especially the first quarter alone. But the thing that really stood out to me for the Sixers was how well they defensively played LeBron James. I don't even think he had double digit scoring at the end of if Kuzma doesn't go off, the Sixers probably win this game going away 30-40 points. But I will say one thing, I do think that Kuzma is a hell of a player. The Lakers might want to think twice before for dealing him, because I think that he could be a nice second option next to a superstar. And looking at the they also got some really good bench play from, you know, Mike Scott. He played 21 minutes. I know he was 3-8 from the field. He had 7 points, but he was a plus minus of 21. TJ McConnell, 6-6 in 19 minutes, which is what we talked about. If you keep his minutes at a decent, that 15 to 20 range, he can be real effective. He was a plus 17, 6-6 from the field, 13 points. Cork Maz, I mean, he did have a good game, but I'm still not a believer in him in terms of him, his defense. But overall, obviously the stars really came to play. I mean, when you're getting from Embiid, Butler, and Redick, Embiid, Butler, Redick, Harris. I mean, Harris was 9 of 14, 22 points. Embiid, 12 of 16. 11 to 12 from the line, 37 points. Jimmy Butler, 6 of 10. So, he only shot the ball 10 times, but he still had 15 points. J.J. Redick, 8 of 13 for 21. And this was Ben Simmons' worst game by far, 3 of 13. He had 8 points.
Yeah, so Simmons was 3 of 13, but he did a lot. He facilitated a lot more. One of the things, I think a lot of the bench players' minutes were inflated a little bit, because of how much of a blowout it was at the end of the game. For the last 6 minutes, the starters didn't really play. Most of them were in the high 20s to low 30s for minutes. And I think that's kind of the game that like, it's okay for Korkmaz to play in, because it's not going to be a defensive battle whatsoever. It's going to be more of a high-scoring game, as was pretty evident. I thought Harris looked really good. The Lakers they're not built properly. Like you said, Kuzma might be a good second option to a star, but LeBron's too old. By the time Kuzma's ready to take that next step, I feel like LeBron's going to be on the downswing, and I don't think he's good enough to carry a team. I think he is what he is, and he's a really nice player, and I think he's more of a third or fourth option is probably the best bet for Kuzma. But back to Harris, what did you see from him, and what do you like about him?
I mean, I just think that Harris is the perfect stretch four next to Embiid. I mean, if you could have put somebody together at the trade deadline that we were looking at, like, I never would have thought that he would be available, but I just think he's the perfect fit. I mean, he can defend. He's long, he's length. I just love his fit with this team. He can shoot from the outside. He can bang low, down low. Just to me, Tobias Harris is the perfect fit next to Joel Embiid as a stretch four. And I look forward to them continuing that chemistry throughout the future.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think Tobias Harris fits perfectly with these guys. I honestly think he fits better than Butler does. I think Simmons is still trying to find his way on how I think he's – pushing it a little too much. His turnovers have been up a little bit, but so he's trying to figure out a way to get everyone involved, which isn't easy, because Embiid, Harris, Butler, and Redick take a lot of shots. So getting everyone involved is a little difficult. They have to learn to ride the hot hand. If someone's going off, they got to keep feeding that guy and then just keep rotating. And there's going to be mismatches. The one thing that was frustrating is sometimes they don't work on those mismatches. But that Lakers game was, I mean, that was a perfect performance in the second half. They pulled away in the fourth quarter and didn't let them stay close.
Matt, one last thing if I could touch on about the Lakers. That was a little bit of a concern for me. I just want to grab your thoughts real quick. The way LeBron James played Ben Simmons, and that, you know, he was basically letting him take jump shots. Now, if teams start to do that in the playoffs, either Ben's going to have to, you know, get a jump shot, or, I mean, what do you do there? Because LeBron was basically, at some point, just playing in the paint.
Oh, it's easy. You know what you do? He's either got – there's two things. He can either shoot, or you run dribble handoffs with Redick. When he sets the pick on Redick's guy, that means Redick's wide open. Or do it with Tobias Harris, then that means Tobias Harris is wide open. So you can't that they he was covered staying off Simmons, but they had a field day with that because they ran dribble handoffs with Redick and he was getting open looks. So it does like it, that's not good defense to do that. Even if that guy can't shoot, you have to respect the other guy coming off the curls, and you have two guys now with Harris and Redick that can hit those open threes. That was LeBron mailing it in that game. He didn't want to be there.
That was LeBron basically not playing defense because he didn't care is what you're saying. So you don't think that's a strategy teams will implement in the playoffs?
I would welcome it with Harris and Redick. And look, we've seen Simmons in pregame. He can hit an open three. He does it in pregame. And I think he finally got to the point, was like, you know what? I'm going to shoot this. And his shot wasn't bad. Like you saw him warming up I don't know if you saw him warming up for the game last night, the World versus USA, the rookies and sophomores, but he was hitting threes pretty consistently.
Yeah, I was watching it. Yeah.
So I'm hoping he could shoot that. So if they're going to leave him open there, go ahead, let him shoot it, or you can run to take advantage of it and get guys open. So that doesn't worry me in the least.
Maybe Ben Simmons will make a three-pointer tomorrow for Team LeBron.
Yeah. I'd rather him make it in a game for us. So then there was, for as good as the Lakers game was, the Celtics game was more of the same crap. It was a continuation of the playoffs last year and the previous games against Boston this year. And one thing that you take note of is Embiid put up 23 points, but he was pretty bad. He cannot have his way with Horford for whatever reason. He gets frustrated and he just packs up threes, and he was 2 of 8 from three, and they weren't bad, but in no world should Embiid take 8 3-pointers. Because he's not that good of a 3-point shooter. He's good for a big man, but he's not a 45% 3-point shooter. Butler put up 22 points. I thought Butler played well, but I think they should have gotten Butler the ball more because he had Rozier covering him, and you have to take advantage of those mismatches, which, by the way, the Celtics take advantage of every mismatch they're afforded, especially against us when we have unathletic wing players out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. Embiid, I don't want to say he was awful, but he really was awful down the stretch. You know, you had that unfortunate play at the end where he was fouled. But like you said, I mean, and I'm going to go even farther. You cannot have Embiid and Tobias Harris shoot a combined 2 for 14 from 3-point range and expect to win the game. I mean, don't get me wrong. Tobias Harris has been really good, but he was really it wasn't very good against the Celtics. 4 of 14 from the field, 0 of 6 from 3-point range, but plus minus the 12 only gave us 10 points. I mean, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it. I agree with you in the fact that Butler should have got the ball more. I mean, he was 7 of 12. He was 7 of 10 from the free throw line. But he also, let's not forget, down the stretch, this team missed critical free throws.
Yeah, he missed 3 free throws in the fourth quarter.
Right. Embiid missed one. I mean, Embiid only got to the line 4 times. You know, I will say that I feel like Horford does get away with a lot with Embiid, but you know, Embiid's going to have to learn to get physical like that, because in the playoffs, he's not going to get away with those swim moves all the time. And it seems like Horford is very respectable. And I got to say, Horford was probably smart with what he did in the beginning of the game, because I feel like that set the tone for the refs. Like, when he got that technical, and really he could have got a double technical the way he went, I feel like that kind of changed the game in a positive for the Celtics. Because after that, I mean, Horford was getting away with a lot. I mean, yeah. I think, he did have five fouls to finish the game, but he got away with a lot. And, I think the refs were kind of like, you know, letting them play after that. And Embiid's got to continue to go after him. And they did not get any production from Mike Scott. 14 minutes, he didn't even shoot the ball. 0 points. Marjanovic, 11 minutes, 4 points. Again, the only person probably off the bench that really was respectable was TJ McConnell. He was 4 for 6 in 13 minutes. He had 9 points. But here's the thing that I'm going to tell you, and people in Philadelphia might not like this. Brett Brown continually gets outcoached by elite coaches. He does not win against Brad Stevens. And Brett Brown makes it easy sometimes for Brad Stevens when you have Furkan Korkmaz out there for 11 minutes, who can't play a lick of defense, and he gave you 2 points. And James Ennis, who's a very good defensive player, does not play. Coach's decision. Jonah Bolden does not play. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, Matt. I mean, in terms of the rotations that you saw against the Celtics that Brett Brown put out there, if he doesn't play Korkmaz 11 minutes, if he maybe gives Bolden some of Marjanovic's minutes and Ennis, you think it's a different route? Because let's look at it. We only lost to this team by 3.
Yeah, they make the plays at the end of the game, and the Sixers don't. That's the way it's been going the last, I don't know, let's say 10 games against them. And we'll get into overall rotations later, but in this game, I don't understand. Like, when you're playing against a team like the Celtics, it's a defensive game. That's a game where James Ennis should play. Korkmaz can play in a game where it's going to be a shootout because he's a better scorer than Ennis. I get it. Makes sense. But in a game against the Celtics, you know it's going to be a defensive battle. It's like last year in the playoffs where they kept throwing out Bellinelli and Redick, and they were murdering us because those two guys can't cover anyone. And Justin Anderson was sitting on the bench, and we were begging last year, just put him in. Put a guy that can defend wings in. Defense is more important than offense. We have enough guys that can score. Our starting lineup averages generally 97 points a game. So our bench players need to be good defensive players so that the defense can be good around our starters. And in this game, our starters only had 87 points. It's kind of the difference in the game. If they hit their average, we win that game. Tobias Harris, he was bad in the game. Embiid was bad in the game. And that's fine. Tobias Harris, it was only his third game. So I understand that this him coming in the All-Star break now, and they'll be able to get practices in, it's going to be good for the team and how they mesh. So I'm going to give him a pass on that. But, I don't understand the Boban playing over Bolden against the Celtics, because the Celtics have athletic centers that can play out on – they were just moving Boban out to the three-point line.
Yep.
And they were taking advantage of it. You have to be able to – I know you want other teams to adapt to what you do. With your bench players, you adapt to what the other team's good at. You shouldn't adapt your starters to what they do, but the bench players should 100% adapt to who you're playing. And I truly believe that. Like, if you're going to play an athletic team with athletic bigs, Bolden should be the guy, not Boban. If you're going to play a high-scoring team, then throw Furkan out there. But if you're going to play a defensive knockdown, drag-out game, Furkan's got no business out there. Just like you can't have McConnell and Redick out there. At the same time, they went 4 or 5 possessions to Marcus Smart in the post against Redick, and either he scored or everyone had to help on that side, and he kicked it to the weak side for an open shot. Like, it doesn't work. Like, you can't have two defensive liabilities out there. Like, and what the Celtics did was they took Rozier out of the game at a certain point, and they had Marcus Smart playing the point guard. So you had McConnell and Smart out there, and they just kept going to the well, and we did nothing. It took us 4 or 5 possessions before we did anything to take McConnell out, and it was too late at that point.
There was a couple other things that stood out for me. From the Celtics, they got production from Hayward, right? I mean, he 28 minutes, 26 points. He looked like the old Gordon Hayward. But this is where the game was lost, because we actually shot better than them overall. You know, from the field, we shot 48%. They shot 46%. Here's where we lost the game. Three categories. The Celtics, 44.8% from three-point range. The Philadelphia 76ers, 33%, 9 of 27. The Celtics, 81% from the free throw line. The Sixers, 71%. And turnovers, 14 turnovers for the Sixers, only 5 for the Celtics. We cannot continue to turn the ball over at these alarming rates. And that's going to be a problem in the playoffs, and that's the problem with this with the young team. As much as I love Ben Simmons, I think he's dynamic. I think he sees, you know, he's probably the best point guard, you know, of his height since Magic Johnson. He still turns the ball over a lot. You know, I know in this game he only turned the ball over 3 times, but, you know, Embiid turned the ball over a few times. You can't have 14 turnovers, right.
And,
you know, constantly.
And by the way, 14 turnovers generally isn't horrible, but them only having 5 turnovers is like
right. –
That kills our offense because we're so good in transition. If they only have 5 turnovers, how many of them lead to transition? 2, maybe 3 at the most. You can't win like that. We don't get them in position to make mistakes, and we make all kinds of mistakes. And it's kind of frustrating playing against them. And look, they have 24 games left to get this right. They need to start winning because the they won. Right now, we're in a first round matchup with the Celtics. And that's not going to go well. You need to get to that third seed. You have to hope that Indiana falls back a little bit. And trying to get that third seed is paramount. I don't think they're going to be able to catch. They're not going to be able to catch Milwaukee. And I don't think they're going to be able to catch Toronto either at this point. So they're shooting for trying to get that third seed. They're 5.5 games back at Toronto with 24 left and 6.5 back of Milwaukee. It's not going to happen. They would have to go, 22-2 to have a chance at catching those guys.
Right.
But look, it's more important what they do come playoff time, but you don't want to match up with the Celtics in the first round. So that needs to be avoided at all costs. And then they had on Wednesday, they played the Knicks and, you know, they started out really well. They were dominant, and that was a sloppy game. Like, it was a real bad game to watch. They ended up pulling away, but I wasn't impressed at all with how they played against the Knicks. They were up by 26 points at a certain point, and they just let them come right back to get it to single digits. You can't do that. You got to put bad teams away, especially when you're coming off a back-to-back so you can get some rest for Embiid, and mainly Embiid. You don't want to have to play Embiid 38 minutes, if you can avoid it. So that's still kind of frustrating. And I mean, I know it's coming. There may have been looking a little bit past that game. And once they got out, they were to a big lead. They were trying to coast to the end of the game, but it's got to be better against bad teams.
There's two. Well, I agree with you. First of all, you can't have a 26 point lead in New York against a horrible team before the All-Star break and let them cut it to 8 or 6. First of all, that's for starters, especially a team that I don't even know when the last time they've won. I forget what the stat was, but they haven't been good. They have 10 wins in the season. So first of all, that's a problem. Two really, really good things that stuck out for me. Now, you would sit there and you would look at the stats and you would say, okay, Jimmy Butler, right? He only took 6 shots. He had 13 points, right? He had 3 steals, 2 blocks, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, plus 31. Jimmy Butler defensively was great, and I thought that he also did a good job running the point. Tobias Harris also 35 minutes, 25 points, 9 of 14 from the field, plus 27. Those are the guys that stood out in the game. I mean, Embiid and Simmons were only a plus 9 and a plus 7, and Redick was a plus 7, but Jimmy Butler really stood out to me with that plus 31. I thought Jimmy Butler, there's so many things that Jimmy Butler does that people don't understand, and you hear the people in the summer, they're like, do you want to give him the max contract, right? Because he's not going to give you 20 or 30 points every night. And you're right, he's not. But like you said previously, when you have 4 superstars, somebody's going to have to take the night off or take the back seat. But Jimmy Butler does it all. Defensively, steals, assists, rebounds, blocks. I mean, Jimmy Butler's going to be paramount come playoff time. He's going to be that guy that's going to be your lockdown defender. And, you know, I thought Butler has done a good job, you know, adjusting or trying to adjust. And I'd like to see Brett Brown, like you said, run the offense more through Jimmy Butler. I don't see it enough. I think it should have also happened in the Boston game as well. But, you know, I think Jimmy Butler is a guy that that really stood out the game. Now, here's something that really stood out for me as we talk when we get closer to the playoffs. Jonathan Simmons, 14 minutes, 3 points, minus 16. That's not going to cut it if you want that ninth playoff spot. You know, ninth man in the rotation. Right now, Jonathan Simmons is not giving me anything that makes me really excited from the trade. You know, Mike Scott, you know, and James Ennis, to me, are your bench players come playoff time, your big bench players, and TJ McConnell, as much as I don't want to admit it. You know, TJ's probably going to have to play an integral part if this team's going to go far.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, I will say that Brown did switch up the rotations for this game. He had play together more, and Harris and Butler play together more. So I did like that he's trying to things and to see what the matchups look like when you get these guys playing with each other. I'll say it didn't look great. It looked really good for Butler and Harris. It didn't look great for Embiid and Simmons. I don't think you want Embiid and Simmons playing together at all times. I think Embiid is better with – I think he's better with Butler, and I think he'd probably be better with Harris because they're better shooters than Simmons. And I also kind of like the idea – I don't think I want Butler and Simmons out there as much together, because then at all times you have Simmons or Butler out there that can run the point. But yeah, like you were saying, the Jonathan Simmons, like in that game, was the disappointing one in the game. And he against the Knicks, you can't be a negative 16. Like there's something to be said there when you and Mike Scott was a minus 5. And I think that was, but Jonathan Simmons minus 16 is unacceptable. I don't know how they're going to be playing him come playoff time. Like you said, if they're going to go to that 9-man rotation. So we get to the All-Star break, and the Sixers are 37-21. And I mean, I think they've given away a couple games. I don't think there's many games that they shouldn't have won that they did win. Maybe at the beginning of the year, there were a couple. That Golden State game, I guess, was a little bit of a surprise that they won that game, but I feel like they've given up more games. I feel like they could easily be a 41-17 team right now. So they need to clean it up come the end of the year. There's 24 games left. It's not the hardest schedule at the end. They have some tough games, but they got through. They had that 12-game stretch before the All-Star break where they went 7-5. Again, they probably should have done a little bit better. We was hoping for an 8-4 run, but in their last 15 games, they're 10-5. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, there's a couple of games off the top of my head that obviously I'd like to have back. The Thunder game, I think they should have won that game. I also think they should have won. Then, you know, the Hawks loss by 2 points was bad. The Wizards lost where they got blown out after they blew out the Wizards on back-to-back. That was bad. And I still think the Celtics on Christmas Day. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think this team should be better than their record is. I mean, I think that they could be anywhere from – they should have 41 to 42 wins right now. But you know what? They're in a good spot. Like you said, you really just want to make sure that you don't get Boston in that first round. That's key.
Right.
Either we're going to get the three, and we'll play Brooklyn right now is the way it would look, or we would get the four, and if Boston gets the three, and then we match up with Indiana. But we want to avoid at all costs. I mean, I don't see a chance where Indiana gets a three seed and then Boston and us match up 4-5, but you never know. Crazier things have happened. I mean, Indiana is still winning without Oladipo, so, you know, but I think it's critical to try to avoid the Celtics at all costs, and even the Raptors. I wouldn't mind a second-round matchup against the Bucks if I had a choice, if I had to choose between having to play the Raptors and Celtics. I agree with what Ben Simmons said yesterday, the two teams in the East. I mean, not taking anything away from Milwaukee, but, you know, Milwaukee doesn't have the experience either. I'd like to avoid the Raptors and Celtics.
I agree. I think that the experience factor with Milwaukee can be a big deal, and at the end of the day, No matter if you how good you think Giannis is, of the top five best players in that series, you have four of them. And I truly believe that. I think it's Giannis, and then you have Embiid, Simmons, Butler, and Harris rounding out. Those are the top five best players in that series. And to, in the playoff, the team with the best players tends to win, or with the most all-stars and superstars tends to win. And I believe that the Sixers would have more of those superstar-type players. So, yeah, it's they need to get it together. The most important thing now, because they have so many new pieces, is they have to gel. And coming up this week, they don't play till Thursday again, so they're going to be able to get practice time in. I'm assuming that they will practice probably Tuesday, Wednesday. They're home Thursday against the Heat, and they're home Saturday against Portland. I mean, they should beat the Heat on Thursday. There's no question about that. But they have to come out to play, because the Heat are an athletic team, and they can they'll muck it up and they'll dirty it up. And we saw last year in the playoffs and in the first round series. But the Sixers are by far the better team, especially now. Saturday's interesting because Portland, with their backcourt with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, and I mean, I'm a big Dame Lillard fan. I always have been. I really like the way that he plays. And McCollum, being a Lehigh guy like me, I always kind of root for him too. So I like that Portland team out there.
Yeah, I think they're decent. All right, they're better than decent. I know they had Enes Kanter. I'm not sure where he fits in for them, but I do think that I'm looking forward to playing Portland, because if I recall the last time, I forget who we had out. I don't know if it was Embiid was out in the game, or we missed Butler. But I think we missed Butler and Embiid that game. And so it was just Simmons that was out there, and it wasn't close. Obviously we got blown out. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this team will match up with Portland.
Embiid. Remember Butler played, and apparently there was that blow up after the game because of how they were playing. Like, that was in the film session.
Gotcha. Okay.
Point. I forgot about that. They got their ass kicked by Portland, so they better come to play next Saturday. Because you only get to play that team twice, and the first time they kicked your butt. So I think that they'll be up to play that game. I don't think there's any question about it. And then, like we said, there's 24 games left. This is it. They have 24 games to gel and play as a team and figure out the best rotations as they are going forward.
There needs to be a steady rotation, moving forward. But I just hope Brett Brown gives everybody an opportunity. If you're going to give Jonathan Simmons and you're going to give Korkmaz, which I don't agree with, an opportunity, then Jonah Bolden deserves it. I mean, I think Jonah Bolden has been trending upward. And now after these trades, I get he has to take a back seat, but I don't think that he should be shoved to the end of the bench. And I don't know what's going on the Blue Coats. I know Patton played really well this week in game. I don't know if he's close to being ready. I don't know if he's somebody to contribute. And I don't know about Zaire Smith. I feel like the clock's running out for Zaire Smith. He still hasn't played yet. His shot form looks great. The videos you sent me, you know, it looks like they really rebuilt his shot. But I think we're kind of closing out on the fact that, is Zaire Smith going to be able to play playoff time?
That a few weeks ago, and that it just didn't look like Zaire Smith was going to have the time to get back. But then there were reports out like 3 weeks ago that he should have been playing, or 2 or 3 weeks ago, that he might be playing. But now that he hasn't been, I just don't think there's enough time to get him back. But hey, I mean, he's the kind of guy that I don't think it's going to be hard to get him into the rotation, because he's just going to be out there to play defense. I'm not even sure how much you'd need him in a series, in like the first round series or not, but he's the guy that can, I think he's going to be really good at covering good athletic point guards, and he's going to be able to D up on them, and he'll be able to cut to the basket, and his shot looks really promising. They completely changed it, and that was his main weakness coming into the league, was his jump shot was inconsistent, and it wasn't very pretty. It looks good now, and it's going to take a lot more practice to get consistent with it, but that he was able to, while he was hurt and not playing, remake that shot and have it be a consistent jump shot, and it looks like he's repeating it over and over again, which is important. It's interesting, even if not for this year, but for next year, it's basically, again, you're getting an extra first round pick next year. And his ceiling is so high that if he comes close to that, he's a home run for them.
Yeah, I think he fits perfectly, especially with what they brought to the table. You know, this year, even in the trades they just made the past couple of weeks ago, I think Zaire Smith fits really well, and I think that's why chances are the Sixers probably, I don't know if his name was discussed with the Clippers, but I'm sure he was somebody that they probably wanted to keep over Shamet, even though Shamet's been, you know, really good with the Clippers. I think Zaire Smith, I agree with you. I think that he's kind of underrated, you know. I mean, I know people here around here were like, oh, Bridges, but if you watch Zaire Smith, especially, you know, in March Madness, the kid can play, and he's got hops outside, out of the gym. And if they're able to really work his shot, I agree with you, you know, Matt. I think he could be a really key contributor come next year and for the future.
Yeah,
for the
76ers. If he has a consistent three-point shot and consistent jumper, he legitimately has star potential. I mean, they were saying that he reminded Brown of Kawhi Leonard when they drafted him, because Brown was with the Spurs when they drafted Kawhi. And I'm not saying that he's going to be that good. I mean, that's asking a lot. But a guy that's as athletic and good defensively as he is, and that can cover from positions 1 through 4. I mean, he was a guy that played power forward in college because they had so many guards. But he's a strong, athletic guy who, if he gets a jump shot, I mean, I think he could be scary good, and he would fit perfectly.
Well, he runs the court too. This team's an up and down running team. I mean,
he cuts really well, and I mean, he'll put up some highlight reel dunks too.
Yeah, I know me and you were pretty high on Zaire Smith. Even, you know, I was fine with them, that move on draft night. I mean, look at what that 2021 Heat pick also got you. I mean, that's what people need to realize. If you put all those pieces together, that trade that was made on draft night, you know, and then you look at what they got now, you know, that was definitely the right move at that time. And that pick was paramount, which, to flipping it to get a star. I mean, I'm glad that they were able to keep that pick out of the Timberwolves deal, you know, because I think that pick is the reason, one of the high reasons why they were able to get Tobias.
Absolutely. And I'm glad. I know that there was a lot of rumors on trades, and the one person we weren't keen on trading, obviously, other than the main guys and Simmons and Embiid and Butler, was I didn't want to trade Zaire Smith, just because I really do believe that a guy that can play defense and as athletic as he is, there's a spot for him. And if he can get his jump shot down, then he could be a really, really good player. And for as good as Landry Shamet was for the team, his ceiling is what his ceiling is. I mean, Zaire Smith is a little bit more of an unknown, but he has star potential. So to me, you don't give up on that guy, especially because they were so keen on him. When we're looking at it, Brett Brown had talked about that there's probably going to be a 9-man rotation going forward in the playoffs is what he's looking to have. Obviously, your starters are set. There's no question about that. And there's not a ton of minutes left because Butler, Harris, and Simmons can play a ton of minutes. I expect come playoff time, those three guys to be playing about 38 minutes to 40 minutes a game.
Right.
I think Embiid's in the 36 to 38 minute range, just because you need to try and big guys, you have to try and limit their minutes. And I think Redick's probably another one that's in the 34 minute to 36 minute range. So that means that there's probably 8 to 10 minutes for McConnell, which, look, our whole issue with McConnell in the past was that he was playing 24, 26, 28 minutes. We've seen after this Harris trade, with McConnell playing 10 to 14 minutes, he's efficient. He's a good player when he's playing 10 to 12 minutes. That's in his wheelhouse, because he can be a madman and run around like crazy and pick up full court all game when he's only playing those 12 minutes. I think Mike Scott's going to get 8 to 10 minutes, 12 minutes out there. And then it depends. Are they going to play Boban? Are they going to play Bolden at the 5? And that 9th spot is the one that's up for grabs and that you alluded to before. And is it going to be Ennis? Is it going to be Jonathan Simmons? Is it going to be Korkmaz? And like I said, Korkmaz doesn't hit the court for me unless you're in an absolute shootout. And I'm still not sure if he's seeing the court, because I think Ennis is a good 3-point shooter and he's much better defensively. And I think Ennis has that ninth spot locked down. He's been much better than Korkmaz and Simmons over the last even handful of games.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's a chance that – I mean, I shouldn't say there's not a chance, but I don't think that there's a chance that Korkmaz sniffs the court come playoff time. I don't think he should. Same thing with Jonathan Simmons, but I like Ennis. I like this bench, but I'm still keeping my eyes out to see if anybody else on the waiver wire, you know, I don't know when the deadline is where they can actually – they have to sign somebody for the playoffs.
It's March 1st.
Okay, so we still have – I mean, we'll see. I mean, who knows? If somebody else becomes available, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to be able
to – like, better backup point. If Patrick
Beverly – I mean, I think
– Patrick Beverly.
The only position that you can possibly upgrade is point guard. And that, I'm not sure how many point guards are going to become available that you can upgrade. But I think Patrick Beverly is definitely one of those guys. I'm not sure – If he hits the free agent market, and two, if we have enough playing time for him that he's interested in coming here. But I don't know how good of his relationship he had with Mike Scott and Tobias Harris and Boban, and if you like those guys, and if that's a way to get him over here. But I would absolutely love Patrick Beverly as our backup point guard, especially with having to potentially face Bledsoe, Lowry, or Kyrie Irving. I mean, to me, Patrick Beverly is exactly what you want in a backup point guard for 12 to 14 minutes a game, where he can get underneath those guys' skin and really rile them up defensively. But we'll see. I had talked to Brandon Robinson last week about that. If he had heard anything about Patrick Beverly potentially becoming available, and he hadn't heard anything, but he kind of thought that it was a move that made sense because the Clippers are obviously not trying to make the playoffs. They want to miss the playoffs because then that way they keep their pick and the Celtics don't get their first round pick. So I wouldn't be surprised if they make a couple ancillary moves like that make them a little worse and guarantee that they're not going to make the playoffs.
Is Lou Williams another buyout candidate for them?
I don't think so. I don't know what his contract looks like. Didn't he just sign?
He signed a 3-year, I think, $30 million last year. So that's why.
So he's got a year and a half left. I don't know if they're gonna go that way of releasing him. But I mean, look, them trading Tobias Harris, they're not trying. I don't think they're. I mean, it's pretty obvious they're trying to keep their first round pick this year. They know that them being a seventh or eighth seed in the West is not the answer to going forward. And it was actually a very intelligent move by a team where most teams usually don't have the realization that being a 7 or 8 seed in the NBA is not a means to being successful. You're better off being worse and being in the lottery and getting a better draft pick because they wouldn't have a chance in the first round.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, especially if they want to keep that Celtics pick, why would you?
Right, and that's the only way they keep their first-round pick. It's an absolute no-brainer for me. So I do think that there are going to be moves there where they start letting – that they're going to buy guys out. But I'm also kind of wondering what's taking so long because they're past the trade deadline. So I don't know if they're half in and half out, which sometimes it seems like teams do because they're afraid to actually make that move to go over the edge and just bail out, but they're obviously not. They're not a better team today than they were before they traded Tobias Harris. So, to me, the decision was made. They're trying to lose.
Right, I agree with you.
So, the other thing that came out this week was Markelle Fultz showed up. What, a week after he was traded, he showed up to Orlando and had a press conference. And look, we were both defenders of Markelle Fultz, and because we saw the talent that he had at Washington, and whatever happened. It's at this point, it's neither here nor there. But he obviously wasn't going to help this team this year. His team didn't do him any favors by talking about that he would be back in 3 to 6 weeks of, of physical therapy. And I mean, everyone knew that that was, I mean, anyone with a clue knew that that was bogus. There's no way the guy can't shoot. He can't lift his arm, but 3 to 6 weeks of physical therapy is all that he's going to need. And I feel bad for the kid. He's immature. There's no doubt about that. But don't burn bridges on your way out. Like, there's no need to make a comment about how what you need is your coaches to push you. Like, that's not what you needed. It was pretty obvious that you needed to be coddled because you couldn't deal with the pressure. And so I'm not sure what benefit there is to taking shots at Brett Brown on the way out, who was always a defender of him.
Yeah, I think that's just a confidence issue for himself. The kid lacks confidence. He doesn't want to take responsibility for his own actions. And I think you're exactly right with what you said a couple weeks ago, even when you didn't want to trade him. I think really what it comes down to is he's surrounding himself with the wrong people, first of all, whoever's giving him advice, and his mom. I think he lets his mom dictate his life, and it kind of reminds me of, like, back in the day. I mean, it's a different sport, but you know how Eric Lindros' dad kind of dictated Eric Lindros. And obviously it turned out where Lindros was a better player, but, you know, you can't have your parents that involved. I mean, I get it, they're your parents, but some of the crazy things that we heard with, you know, the cameras set up at the house, it was just like, there's a lot going on with Markelle Fultz. You know, I'm pretty much done after that comment. Like I said, maybe the kid needs help that, you know, is off the basketball court, and, you know, hopefully he gets it. I don't wish ill will on anybody, but it was the right move for the Sixers. It's a shame almost that they didn't pull the trigger earlier, because I think they would have been able to get more than Jonathan Simmons. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's kind of got to be, you know, it's over. It's done with. But like you said, why are you throwing shots at people, especially, you know, Embiid, Simmons, all these guys that seem to have your back, like, you know, to take a shot at the organization on the way out? It kind of seems
bothers me is it's not like he was taking not at the organization, taking a shot at Brett Brown, who always seemed like he had the best, like, the kid's best interests at heart. Like to me, that bothers me. Like, by the way, it's stupid. Clifford and Brown are friends. Like, you don't need to. It's a sign of immaturity that you knock someone down to build someone yourself up or someone else up. You don't need to do that. Steve Clifford doesn't need you to be rah-rah and be like his biggest defender. He's good. He's a grown man. He's got a handful of professional basketball coaching positions in the NBA. He doesn't need you to build him up. You don't need to take shots at everyone. Just say how you're excited for a new opportunity and you're excited to join a young team and this, that. You enjoyed your time in Philadelphia. You wish it could have gone better, this, that. You don't have to be so in-depth about it. And I hate it goes to the point that how immature he is. He's never going to attain the level of what we thought he could be, because they're still blaming everyone else for every little thing that goes wrong. It's not his fault. And by the way, that the injury, I've talked to people that are really, like, people in the know, that there was definitely a motorcycle or a BMX accident where he jacked up his shoulder. And last week I talked to Brandon Robinson, and he had put that out, and he was 100% on that he knows that is what happened. But what that means is that can void your contract because it was something that he shouldn't have been doing. And it just seems all along they're trying to blame everyone else for it's not his problem, it's everyone else's problem. And now apparently there's more shit that's going to come out with him. And look, I feel bad for the kid, but he's not helping himself. And the people around, the adults around him, because he's not an adult, are definitely not helping him.
I agree with you. And it also, I mean, I don't want to spend too much more time on him because he's not part of the Sixers. And like you said, you wish him luck. But I got to say this, like, who did background research on Markelle Fultz before the Sixers drafted him? What type of kid was he? And obviously, maybe he wasn't this type of kid. Maybe he's, you know, your typical person where, you know, you're not used to this lifestyle. You're surrounded by money. You can't handle it. But I'm just wondering because the Celtics were so, you know, ready to trade this pick, even if it wasn't to the Sixers. So it makes you wonder, like, you know, whoever did research or whoever, you know, obviously I don't trust Colangelo farther than I could spit. So, you know, obviously with him, you can't say anything, but like, it just makes me wonder.
Yeah. I mean, talent was there, but when I'm the character issue, and I mean, he comes across as really immature, and I mean, they should have been spending enough time that, and I think there's talk that people in the organization after meeting with him weren't too keen on him because of his immaturity, but the decision makers were, they made the trade for him specifically, and that's what they were going to do. And look, it is what it is. At the end of the day, the Philadelphia 76ers have Joel Embiid, they have Ben Simmons, they have Jimmy Butler, and they have Tobias Harris, and they have J.J. Redick, who's the perfect complement to those four guys. They are stacked. Their starting lineup is as good as – it's better than everyone else's in the NBA, maybe except for the Warriors. The Warriors have a better starting lineup. And but, look, I believe they can beat them, but they are – they're hands down the best starting lineup in the Eastern Conference. So it's on them to gel and to get it right going into the playoffs. They can't be selfish. It can't be guys fighting for shots. Look, if they want to win, and I think these guys want to win, then they have to do what's best for the team. What happens in the summer happens in the summer. I don't know how happy Butler's going to be with taking a back seat and what it may be. But for this year, look, the further they go, the better they do, the better chance I truly believe in Jimmy Butler coming back. And I think Tobias Harris is going to stay. I mean, he seems to fit perfectly with Simmons and Embiid. So I think that's more likely and definitive that he would stay. And but look, if you don't win, people aren't going to be happy. There's sure as hell no one that wants to give up opportunities to build their own stats and lose too.
I agree. So we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, we still have what you said, 25 games left, so I'm curious to see what this team really does, because like you said, they definitely have the best starting five in the East. I don't think there's any question about it. I don't think that the Toronto move of acquiring Marcus Gasol, you know, even they still, the Sixers by far have this best starting five in the East. I do think that Simmons' progression, can he start to make a consistent jump shot? You know, I think that can play a factor of how far this team goes, but I agree with you. I think it's the defense, you know, defensively. And I think that's what Prep Brown needs to find out, Matt. Who is my best scorer, right? Not Cork Maz, because he can score, but who is my best defender? Who's going to, because like you said, defense wins championships. You know what I mean? I mean, the Sixers have enough. They have enough of scorers. They need defense, and they need somebody that can lock down the wings. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how everything turns out in these next couple of months. And, you know, the future of the organization, because if they make a first-round playoff exit, are the big four still here? Is Britt Brown still here? But those are all conversations for another day.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Look for our next podcast to drop next week. Unless something major happens, then we'll get an emergency pod out. Keep an eye out on the Pulse Podcast Network for a lot of new podcasts on all major sports and team-specific pods. And follow us on Twitter at 76ERSFO. All right, Ryan, I'll talk to you later. Have a good
one. All right, Matt. You too. How do you know, man?